This is a podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Time for our weekly look at health and fitness with Professor Gordon Lynch at the University of Melbourne. Gordon, good morning.
Good morning, Rod.
Now, Gordon, here's something that a lot of people are concerned about as they get older, because it used to just be called middle age spread, that it was a natural thing that as you got older, you got bigger, you got wider, you got fatter. So the question is, why does that happen? Can we prevent it? And what are the problems with it?
Yeah, well, I think it's seemingly a natural phenomenon. And I think the main part of your question is, can we do something about it? And the answer is yes. Are we willing to do something about it is the other issue. This really stems from research which has just been published in the very prestigious journal Nature Medicine. And it came from the Karolinska Institute in Sweden. They had a few collaborators in other parts of Sweden and France. But this particular group studied fat cells in 54 men and women over a 13-year period. So they're studying the cells themselves, and specifically they're examining what we call lipid turnover, or the capacity to store and remove lipids and how that affects the fat or the adipose. And they used a technique, and it involves the incorporation of carbon-14, a radioactive carbon, into the fat cell lipids. And they were able to then determine the age and the turnover of the lipids during the person's lifetime. Quite fantastic, really. And what they found was that over this sort of 13-year period where they were studying them, regardless of whether they gained or lost weight, there were decreases in the lipid turnover in the fat tissue. So there's changes in the way that turnover was happening as they got older. And those that didn't compensate for that by eating less gained weight by an average of around about 20%. The other thing they did was that they looked at lipid turnover in around about 40 women who had undergone bariatric surgery. That's, you know, a procedure to reduce the size of the stomach, usually with a gastric band or a removal of the portion of the stomach. And they looked at how the lipid turnover rate affected the ability of these people to keep the weight off 4 to 7 years after they had the surgery. And what they found was that those who had a low rate, this turnover rate before the surgery, managed to increase the lipid turnover and maintain their weight loss. These people seemingly had more room to increase their lipid turnover than those who already had a high level pre-surgery. So this was about how we can sort of speed up this turnover later on. And one way to speed up this lipid turnover in the fat tissues is, of course, to exercise more. And the researchers made this pretty clear that their research supported this concept that exercise was very important to increase lipid turnover in the fat tissue. And the researchers believe that in the long term, the result of this sort of weight loss surgery, the long-term outcomes of that surgery could be improved if it was combined with physical activity. You know, so really getting the engine going and increasing that lipid turnover rate. So the basic premise of this research has just been published. They've shown that processes in our fat tissue that regulate these changes in body weight during aging are actually independent of other factors. There's actually this change in the turnover rate of the cells, and we need to do other things to ensure that we have to compensate. If we don't compensate, then naturally we're going to gain weight.
Okay, no one wants to be overweight. That I think is fair to say. But these days it is so difficult just to live a normal life and not gain weight, just partly because of the foods that we eat and the lifestyles that we have. So what can you do to lose weight rather than not put it on in the first place?
Yeah, and I know that sometimes this is quite a contentious issue, and people say it's all too hard and so on, but I think I want to try and take some sensible steps here and to try them or give consideration. And if it is a major concern, then you need to speak with your doctor because they, you know, in consultation with them, there may be other things that need to be assessed as well as why you might not be able to lose weight and so on. So it's a serious issue. It's something we need to take very sensibly, but there are some simple things that we can try. And the first one I'd like to suggest is to write a food diary. And if you can do that for at least 4 days, but up to a week or so, have a little book with you, a pen and paper, write down everything you eat, where and when you're eating it, and who you're eating with. And don't wait till the end of the week to try and recall what you did. Do it at the time you're eating it, because it won't work otherwise. But you have to be honest with yourself. And it's not to be, I say, paranoid about this, but it's just to say, don't need to show anyone the results. But you'll actually be very surprised by what you've got written down. The most obvious connections will be what, when, and where you're eating, and also who you're eating with. And particular environments and people can trigger certain eating behaviours. And it's just a matter of looking at sensibly and thinking, what can you look at and change in the course of that diary, that week, that may change the way that you're eating patterns and how that may lead to long-term weight gain and so on.
I know this is difficult to accept for some, myself included. Eating a meal, whether it be at home or out in a restaurant, is supposed to be an enjoyable experience. We treat ourselves. We can't always only eat what's best for us.
I don't subscribe to this constant vigilance either. I love my food, and I've made that very clear over many years, and I indulge in other things, but I try and compensate in other ways. And I think this is where this idea of eating less and exercising more is not, it's not an easy thing. Now, the great thing about the food diary is that it can show you where you can might cut that discretionary calories, the discretionary kilojoules. And more importantly, you know, you might not need to make too many changes if you perhaps change your exercise habits as well. So the idea is, I think if we think about exercise for weight loss, you may be very disappointed if you're just doing moderate exercise and think you're going to be losing weight. It's really got to be a combination of what sort of foods you're eating and your exercise activity. But it's the type of exercise as well. And we've discussed, you and I, in this program for many years about what exercises we should be doing for weight loss. The simplest one, if you're an able-bodied person, is to walk more. Just consider the activity patterns during the day. Are you being physically active? Are you taking the stairs? That incidental activities. Structured activities, it may be a walking program that can be effective if done in conjunction with reduction in the food intake, sensibly, of course, but it's a combination of the aerobic exercises, that's the improvement for the heart and lung health, and your muscle health and bone health with resistance training. And it doesn't have to be an elaborate program, but it should be something that you stick with. Thinking about, well, you're looking after your heart and lungs, you're looking after your bones and muscles with different types of exercises. Strength training or resistance training for the bones and muscles, aerobic exercises, so the walking, the riding the bike, swimming activities and so on for the improvement of your aerobic fitness, the cardiorespiratory, the heart and lung health. I think those sorts of things become very important. Now, this two-pronged approach of muscles and bones and with your heart and lungs, together with this change in the food habits. And that's where the food diary and even an exercise diary might be with things, how you might change different things in your daily habits that will lead to long-term improvements in weight control.
Okay, Gordon Lynch is our guest as we talk health and fitness this morning. Long-term weight loss, I mean, in the end, as you point out, there's two ways of doing it. You eat less, you exercise more. It's that simple. It's not easy to do, but it's a simple formula, isn't it?
It is a formula, but I think we do cop a lot of flack if we just say it's as simple as that. And I think if we think about all the different behaviours, and that's where I think the food diary and the exercise diary are actually pretty important, because it shows us, I want to make sure that we're enjoying life. It shouldn't be something, and I used to about enjoying the food. I too love my food. So I want to make sure that we're not restricting our enjoyment of life or restricting certain foods. We just have to compensate here and there, and we have to change habits, and we have to do it in the longer term. If we just do it for a week or so, that's not going to be good. So another thing I wanted to talk about was not to eat too little. So these very low energy diets, in the short term, you're going to lose weight for sure, but they're very difficult to maintain in the long term. You're going to become tired, you become irritable, you won't have the energy to exercise, people won't want to eat with you because you're going to be saying, no, I can't eat this, can't eat that, and so you're not going to be good company. In some cases, these very low energy diets may be used under medical supervision, and that's to support weight loss that's required, especially for obesity, if you have a medical condition like type 2 diabetes, or if you have sleep apnea. There are certain things that need to be done to improve weight loss, and that's done in consultation with your doctor. And sometimes these diets are actually associated with a number of unpleasant side effects. So you need to think about that very carefully. But don't eat too little. Now, I think that's a mistake that people make, is that they go, you're too drastic. They get an initial weight loss and think this is fantastic, but they can't sustain it. And so that's why we have to think more sensibly about how we do that. And one of them is making sure that you're consuming sufficient calories, that you can do exercise and you can have the energy to go through your daily life.
One of the simple things you can do, though, is to minimize, eliminate if possible, but minimize certainly processed foods, packaged foods. Obviously, fresher is better.
On this program, we talk about the 5-2. The 5 veg and the 2 fruit is our starting point for a healthy nutrition. And that's making sure we're consuming vitamins and minerals through fresh produce, if possible, 5 vegetables and 2 fruit as the starting point, and that goes for children and adults. And if we can consume more, that's great, within reason, of course. But thinking about, as you say, that the packaging and the processing usually means about additives and preservatives and so on. So the fresher, the better. And I think those sorts of things are the healthier choices of foods, as opposed to reaching for the high fat or the high salt or the high kilojoule content foods, where if we're stressed or we're bored or we're using food to get us through, comfort foods and so on, they typically aren't the most healthy foods to choose. And if we look at that, and if we're keeping a food diary, we might think, oh geez, I had that chocolate bar there, or I had, and you could, I'm not saying you shouldn't have a chocolate bar, because I'd not be telling the truth, because I love chocolate, but the idea is, if we're going through the course of the week, you can stage that and reward yourself, as you say, but making sure that it's within reason. And I think you're just taking steps here and there, you'll be very surprised how many kilojoules you can actually reduce in your total intake over the course of the week.
So another thing is to drink plenty of water and steer clear of sugary drinks, because they make you fat.
Yeah, so it's the high kilojoule drinks, the soft drinks that are laden with sugar and so on. There's so much press about that at the moment, and we've been talking about it for nearly 20 years. The other thing is to limit your alcohol intake as well. I mean, I drink alcohol. I love wine. I love beer, especially stout, and I've talked about that a lot as well. But it's also trying to not go overboard, and I think it's about enjoyment of life. And I'm never one to say, you must not eat this, you must not have that. I'd never say that. But it's about trying to do it in a sensible fashion. If we can cut back here and there, increase the exercise here and there, and I think that food diary and exercise diary is actually, it's not too onerous, but you've got to do it honestly, and you don't have to show anyone, but you'll be surprised where you can cut things out here and there. And in the longer term, this is what it's about for health, it's in the long term you'll reap the rewards of better weight control. And you can do it slowly and gradually, rather than this quick drastic loss of weight which will quickly be regained as soon as you go back to your normal habits.
And that is also good advice. Just because you've lost some weight doesn't mean that you can go back to eating those terrible foods, because you think, oh, well, I'm down to a goal weight. That just doesn't happen. You need to make sure that you keep those habits, those good eating habits and exercise habits, so as to maintain that goal weight.
Yeah, and from our research study that we discussed this morning, especially as we get older, we fall into those other habits and we gain weight very easily. If we can think about it sensibly, there may be ways we can stave off that weight gain and maintain a healthier approach to life for the longer term.
Now, Gordon, just before we go this morning, we did get an email from one of your fans asking about working out on a treadmill and whether it is better to do your workout without holding on to the handles or the sidebars or whatever, or just walking on the treadmill. Is there a difference?
There is a difference. Any time that you're holding on, it's actually you're working, your intensity is reduced. So for safety purposes, if you're new to walking on a treadmill, and it does take some time to get used to walking on a treadmill, you can hold on and you can get your confidence up. But as you gain that confidence and it becomes safe to do that activity on the treadmill, then you should not be holding on. The idea is really about increasing the intensity of exercise and the walking, because normally as you're walking in the street, you're not holding onto objects or other things, and so we're trying to mimic what's happening outdoors. If it's a safety issue, if there are certain health conditions and so on, then of course it's all about safety first, and if you have to hold on, you have to hold on. You're still turning the legs over and so on and getting some benefit. But if you're looking to, especially we're talking about weight loss and other things, the intensity of the walking is pretty important. So if you're holding on and or reading in the book, and as you're hunched over holding onto the rails, you're really not doing the best service to yourself. So I think make sure you can stand straight, looking forward, exercising as you would be outdoors, as you would be on the treadmill.
Gordon, thanks very much for all that advice this morning. We'll talk to you again same time next week.
Thanks a lot, Rod.
Gordon Lynch, Health and Fitness. And that was another podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.